It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Back live, we've talked a fair amount on this program about H.R. 1, also known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Tax cuts, benefit reductions to health care and food assistance for the poor are all big parts of the legislation, but there is a lot more that is in the bill, including significant changes to the way we create and pay for energy. The legislation rolls back investments in clean energy, aiming to return our focus to oil and natural gas. Given how much new energy infrastructure has been wind and solar, combined with increasing electricity demands from data centers and electric vehicles, it stands to reason these moves could make our energy grid more expensive and less reliable. One climate journalist, Emily Atkin, wrote that energy and climate policy in the OBBBA is basically a copy-paste of a secret oil industry wish list. These moves might also affect your wallet. The nonpartisan think tank Energy Innovation found that in 5 years, Illinois households might pay an average of $190 more per year for electricity than they do now. We want to hear from you about this at 800-222-9455. How do you think these changes will affect you and your community? 800-222-9455. What about our climate? What changes do you think this might bring to what people have been working on to try and mitigate the effects of climate change? 800-222-9455. What about health of people in your community? 800-222-9455. And finally, what about your finances? Do you think shifting emphasis from renewable energy to fossil fuels will save you money or cost you more in the long term? Let us know how you're thinking about these issues at 800-222-9455. Joining us now to talk more about this is Jennifer Walling, Executive Director of the Illinois Environmental Council. Jen, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Brian, and big support to public media at this time, too.
Well, thank you for that. It's we are certainly living in interesting times. So let's start broadly here. How is the One Big Beautiful Bill Act going to affect? I don't know. Let's start with the climate. Give us some of the big ticket items in there.
Yeah, well, this we're calling it the Big Ugly Bill is a bill that's going to increase pollution and increase climate emissions throughout the whole country. And what we're going to have to do in Illinois is work to stop that. Just in Illinois, we estimate it'll increase air pollution by 3 million metric tons of carbon dioxide by 2030 and 6 million by 2035. We know it'll worsen pollution and health disparities, especially in low-income and Black and brown and Indigenous communities. We know that this bill is going to have really negative effects on public health, air pollution, our ability to breathe.
Let's talk about some of the mechanisms for that, because it's not like the bill is like, you know, we shall pump more pollutants into the atmosphere, right? How does this actually work in practice?
Yeah, so this bill rolls back a number of the measures in the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed during the Biden administration, but some items that are even older than that. So it's looking at things like tax credits for residential solar, some of the credits for utility scale wind and solar. It looks at anything that would incentivize a clean source of technology is being removed, either quickly or over a couple of years.
What is the end goal of that, right? I mean, so, you know, there's one news report that, you know, basically says this is an oil and gas and even, I guess, nuclear and coal a wish list. How do you see it in that regard?
I mean, it's hard to look at this bill as being anything other than punitive to states like Illinois and ones that have decided that clean energy is in our future. And it's so ironic to hear from an administration that has been so focused on a state's ability to do things. But this doesn't even feel like a coal and nuclear wish list, because there isn't additional subsidies for those type of technologies. It feels punitive. Governor Pritzker has been a leader in the nation on climate change. He, with the state legislature, has set this path for our state that we want to go on. I think we're still going to go on this path, and there are ways that we can continue to do it more quickly. But I think that this bill is punitive towards states that have chosen this direction, that have chosen to address climate change, who have chosen to lower our bills, and have chosen to reduce air pollution.
How exactly, like, so what talk about some of the things that Illinois has done specifically that might be affected, you know, or prohibited or weakened or how that works here, you know, with what the state is trying to do in terms of addressing climate goals.
Yeah, so we have in 2021, the legislature passed and Governor Pritzker signed the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act. And this is a bill that charts out the renewable energy future for the state of Illinois. We have decided that that is the path that we want to take. And it's a path that is reducing air pollution. It's a path that is lowering bills with the cheapest source of new energy. And what this bill does is remove related federal subsidies. So, for example, on utility scale wind and solar, we're looking at tax credits that roll off around 2027. And the recent executive orders, there's this bill, but then there have been executive orders to try to bring into question some things beyond what is in this tax credit package. So, for example, there's one just today or yesterday on requiring federal approval of all utility scale solar, or calling into question when a project could be energized to reach those tax credits. So it's both that uncertainty that's going to impact projects in Illinois, and long term removing one of the legs of support that has been there for a while for some of these projects. I mean, some of these are new to the Inflation Reduction Act, like some of the EV or home energy credits, but some solar and wind credits have been around for a long time, even through previous Republican administration.
You know, anyone who drives our interstates knows that there has been a lot of wind development in Illinois in recent years. I, oddly, had the chance to take a hot air balloon ride last week, and I got to tell you, it's even more impressive from the air how much wind there is, at least around Danville. And some of that may have been in Indiana, I'm not sure exactly. But talk about what specifically this will do for, like, is there going to be a rush? Is that even going to be possible to, you know, finish developing wind projects? You know, and how does that work with permitting and supply chains and everything else that's been an issue?
Yeah, I think that right now there is a lot of uncertainty. Like I said, in addition to HR 1, there are the couple of executive orders that are going to call into question the ability to put this in as quickly as possible. But I hope and I think Governor Pritzker will choose a pathway for Illinois where we work to get renewable energy deployment done as quickly as we can. That needs to be our priority in the future, is getting the stuff built. Getting it out the door as quickly as we can. And there are a number of things that we can do to make sure that happens. I mean, I do want to do it with community input and process. But, there's been a lot where community input and process has been really impacted by the fossil fuel industry, even in Illinois. These are projects that are paying really great property taxes for schools to counties in Illinois. They have provided a lot of benefits for communities that are concerned about sprawl. It's been a place that preserves agricultural character. And so it's I my goal going forward is how quickly can we get renewable energy deployed and out the door? How can we couple it with storage? We know our marching orders for Illinois.
Let me actually take a moment to remind listeners this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Jen Walling, Executive Director of the Illinois Environmental Council, specifically about the HR 1, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which Democrats and their allies are calling the Big Ugly Bill. But we're talking specifically about its provisions related to energy, the environment, climate, that sort of thing. If you want to join us today, we'd love to hear your perspective on this at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right. I wonder, what do you think about this critique of the Biden administration in particular, Democrats more broadly, that, you know, it takes too long to get these things realized. The Inflation Reduction Act, which had a lot of this, a lot of these sort of clean energy initiatives in them, you know, it really, people didn't get to experience the benefits of it before Republicans could now come in and start undoing it. How do you think about that?
Yeah, I think there's a piece where we need to find a real balance between development bureaucracy, right? So we need to make sure that our government is working efficiently and effectively and moving these projects forward, because we're seeing where this person at the federal government is moving things without process, without listening to anybody, without any stakeholders, and it's just doing and acting in ways that are going to cause, that are causing chaos, not just to individual Americans, but also to business and economy. And so I think that we need a bit of a balance. And for environmentalists, literally the environmental movement started as not in my backyard. And we need to be a lot more yes in my backyard now to ensure that these projects move forward. Of course, I don't want to skip any steps. I want to make sure we thoroughly look at each project. But that doesn't mean that we need to give tools to our opposition to be able to stop projects because of some small piece that really doesn't need to be considered. And so we're going to do a lot of work on education throughout the state, especially with counties and municipalities that want to move these forward. This is such an important piece of Illinois' economic development. We're looking at so much investment that can come into the state, has come into the state. And I think we've also done a really not a great job of telling the positive stories, not only of IRA, but of CEJA. For every county that wants to turn a permit down, there's a county that is delighted by the amount of property tax money that they've brought in, that they don't need to consolidate schools because they have this money. There are property owners that can keep their farms open longer, that can pass their farm to future generations because they have this economic income. And figuring out ways to share those messages throughout Illinois is going to be critical going forward. And it's something that the Trump administration is trying to squash.
I hear some shades of this abundance idea that's out there. Are you a fan of I don't know, wind farms on Lake Michigan off the North Shore, all the expensive neighborhoods up there?
Well, I think when it comes to any energy, we need to be choosing. Even in that renewable energy development, we need to be choosing the sources of energy that are going to be the most efficient and cheapest first. And right now, renewable energy is the cheapest source of energy. I think when you get into Lake Michigan, we're not like the East Coast, where the cheapest place to build renewable energy might be in those oceanic waters. Lake Michigan development is going to be expensive. We're going to have some discussions about it. We do have lots of land, both for solar and wind, and in the city, throughout the state, that is cheaper. And so I think we go with those things first, and we continue to have discussions because renewable energy absolutely should be located in population centers. And of course, there is the higher price of land that we consider in some of the urban areas. But those are all things that need to be on the table. And even when we think about things like nuclear energy, when I look at that, I'm looking at cost. I'm looking at how long it'll take to deploy. Nuclear energy is not a short-term energy source, especially like renewables coupled with battery storage. And it's extremely expensive. And I think the only thing right now, especially with this HR1, is we're really looking at gas and peaker plants being built more quickly, because those are the ones that you can get off the ground faster, not faster than renewables, but faster than other things. So that's really what the race is about right now. It's about methane gas or renewable energy.
It's interesting. You say that renewable energy, wind, solar is cheaper, but I think that one of the arguments we'll hear from the other side is that if you can sort of take the shackles off of petroleum and oil and gas, basically, that could be cheaper too, right? The American Petroleum Institute CEO, I saw him quoted saying, "This historic legislation will help usher in a new era of energy dominance by unlocking opportunities for investment, opening lease sales, and expanding access to oil and natural gas development." How do you make the case? Like, why is it that you say that wind and solar is actually cheaper?
Well, and first and foremost, from a philosophical but real point of view, those industries don't want to install filters. They want to filter the air with our lungs. They want children to breathe in particulate matter. They want this to impact public health. I mean, it's literally a choice of Do you pay for something with dollars, or do you pay for something with people's bodies? And that's the place where we need to start at. These industries not only have been subsidized with actual money, they've been subsidized with public health, whether it's the contamination of water, whether it's the contamination of air, land, all of these pieces that they have been subsidized. And there still are subsidies for all of these types of industries. I even look at Illinois and I'm always learning about, I think we've done a lot on removing some of the subsidies, but we have exemptions for coal mining equipment. We pay for coal mining rescue. We're not paying for any renewable energy rescue centers in any of this. And so I think from that standpoint, that's what we're looking at. And that is why coal and natural gas have been cheap. It's been because we're subsidizing it with our health and our environment.
We need to take a break in about a minute here, but one other point is jobs. I'm old enough to remember when that was the dominant word in American political discourse, but your group has estimated 760,000 manufacturing and energy jobs might be eliminated. Briefly, why is that?
Yeah, so those are the organizations we're working with nationally, and we're looking at as many as 52,000 manufacturing and energy jobs just in Illinois. And that is because of the impacts that this might have on industry where we may not be building in the future. And when we're looking in Illinois, we have a really strong equity eligible jobs employment numbers. And so this is something that's going to affect all communities. And so this is from renewable energy that won't be built because we have taken away these tax credits and even this infrastructure support. So this is something that I think especially in the early 70s, as we're looking this, environment was really seen as a job killer. And that has not come to be the case in the last 50, 60 years. We're creating jobs, we're creating economic development. It is clear that is the case. And
All right,
so,
I'm gonna have to interrupt you. I'm sorry, we need to take a break. We're on a fixed clock. We will continue with Jen Walling after this. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the One Big Beautiful Bill and how it might affect energy, climate change, electricity prices, and the environment more broadly. My guest for this part of the show today is Jennifer Walling. She is Executive Director of the Illinois Environmental Council, sort of an organization that works with a lot of different environmental groups, sort of an umbrella organization, if you will, here in Illinois, advocating for clean energy, clean air, that sort of thing. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us on the show today. That's 800-222-9455. And let's go now to the phones. Paul is calling from Urbana. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I started my call about the punitive aspect of the bill. It actually taxes new developments on solar and wind. At a level, not only are they still subsidizing all of the oil and adding to that and subsidizing nuclear, my worry about nuclear is the Price-Anderson Act, which never gets discussed, is a subsidy to the nuclear industry. It actually shifts liability for an accident to the taxpayers. Basically, it indemnifies. It was important in the first rollout. And with the proliferation of all these micro modular reactors, they're calling them, does the Price-Anderson Act apply to those? It's up for renewal, and I think that's something that environmental groups should oppose. That's a implicit subsidy of nuclear power. We have one going up supposedly right in the middle of Champaign-Urbana, which I've been so wrought about for so long that I've written an article and I'm sending it to your list. So please discuss maybe starting with how punitive it is, because it's just amazing that the subsidies go on. They're enhanced for petrochemicals. It's we're on a crash course with the environment or something. I don't know. It's very disturbing.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate the call. Jen Walling.
Yeah, I think some of the real punitive taxes that would be for taxes on renewable energy that were originally proposed, I don't think actually ended up in the final bill, but those were pieces of the discussion. But the all of the repeal of the tax credits definitely did, and definitely items that move forward, nuclear and methane gas. The administration has already chosen to allow methane gas to leapfrog over renewable energy in terms of the RTOs. So definitely those are huge concerns. And I think when I look at nuclear as a priority, it's really about cost and speed, because anybody that tells you that nuclear energy is going to be built in a way that addresses short-term capacity, just it's not the case. These facilities, even the small modular reactors, are taking 10, 20 years to get built. I saw a like 240 megawatt reactor that was like $5.3 billion, and that's a piece that you're looking at, $500 million in terms of wind and solar if you're building that big of an array. And so it's just a wildly different cost. And I think that is going to be the piece that doesn't expand nuclear as quickly as some of those advocates would like.
What do you? I know we've talked about the idea that this is a divide among some people who are very climate concerned, right? Whether nuclear energy is truly clean energy or a green energy or a viable alternative. What do you understand about why that sort of gets a pass in from this legislation from the administration?
Yeah, I mean, in Illinois, there's a bit where our nuclear power plants are contributing to our carbon-free goals. And, 2 days after session, Constellation announced that it sold all of the environmental attributes of the Clinton plant to Meta, starting in 2027, which was just a the timing was definitely purposeful to really stick their finger up at the state legislature. And so I think that that piece is definitely problematic.
Can I ask you to explain that? Why is that a maybe which finger, a middle finger at the General Assembly to sell to do what they did with Meta, the company formerly known as Facebook?
I mean, those types of agreements take months and months to negotiate, and it was announced just a couple of days after legislative session, where the legislature couldn't respond quickly to it. It couldn't examine it in depth. And so I think that one of the things that we're looking at with data centers, for example, and this relates to HR1 as well, is that data centers are going to take up more and more energy. They're going to require more capacity. They're going to require us to build more infrastructure and more transmission. And that, you think, oh, economies of scale, maybe it'll make energy cheaper. But no, it means that all of those things that we're going to need to build are going to be current investment that's going to cost a lot of money. And so, we're already looking at rate increases in June for both Ameren and ComEd, and we're going to see huge rate increases from data centers. One of our pieces on this has been bring your own new clean energy to data centers, has been the policy that we want to see. And we don't view nuclear energy in that clean energy pot. Nuclear energy has waste, it has mining issues. It might not have carbon, but it has those other problems. So we're looking at the, Beyonce, bring your own new clean energy to data centers. But I think that the negotiation on that will be difficult, even in Illinois, with all the other pieces that are in place. But it's definitely something, as we build new energy, should be wind and solar coupled with battery storage.
It took me a minute to get the Beyonce joke there, but on that note, there are people who are bringing Beyonk, I guess, to their data centers. Elon Musk's Colossus facility in Memphis, Tennessee, is using methane-powered turbines, and this gets at another point that I've heard environmentalists making about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. There's been backlash there because of environmental harms to the local community, which happens to be black. This seems to relate to both an increase in energy demands from AI and also which communities are going to face consequences from that sort of development. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Even if the facilities aren't bringing in their own new dirty energy, many of these facilities have backup diesel generators. And where they have gone, even within Illinois, people complain about the smell and the air pollution. All of these facilities do have to get federal Clean Air Act permits. It's a federally enforceable state operating permit because of the emissions that they create, just to make sure that they're running all of the time. And definitely environmental justice concerns, huge. This administration has erased environmental justice communities. They've gotten rid of all of the staff at USEPA that works on environmental justice. They've gotten rid of maps and data that is really concerning. And with the US Supreme Court ruling about race, there are some concerns about adding race to some of those models. And I hope that Illinois responds. I know I've been really proud of our new IEPA director, James Jennings, and his work and how his team is really looking at environmental justice. And it turns out when you map pollution, past and present, you end up with a lot of Black and brown and low-income communities. You don't need to use race as an item to get to the same communities because that's where we've always been putting it. And this bill will incentivize continuing to put pollution in Black and brown communities, worsening. These are the communities that we're using their lungs as filters, and it's gross. We need to stop.
I want to ask you, maybe take a step back from the discussion of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and just talk about what it's like being an environmental leader and advocate at a time of intense opposition from your own federal government. You've been through Democratic and Republican administrations, both in Illinois and in Washington, a number of times now. Talk about how it changes your approach, how it makes you feel about what you do.
Yeah, I think there is a piece, and I hear this from other folks as well. Like, I always feel like I'm on a treadmill with incline, and now we're at, the highest incline possible, but we're still going and we're still moving forward. We're still on the treadmill trying to get this work done. And I think that in any of this, we are going to have to figure out what wins that we can have and how we can build on this deletion, because we will get there. The American public likes what we're doing. Illinoisans like what we're doing. It is strongly supported. It's American clean environment. And so I think that we are eventually going to see progress, even if we're watching this devastation and setbacks now. And it's a light piece, but I've been through a number of governor's administrations in this job, and there were pieces that I got done with Governor Rauner that were things on clean energy. There were pieces on lead, and I think how I work in an actively bipartisan way to bring both parties to my values and not move my values to the parties is really important to me. And I think the values that we're bringing up of efficiency, of bill affordability, of drinkable water is really something that is universally supported, even if those fiscal constraints come in. So we need to figure out how to move forward in that way. I think, environmentalism is really the root of a lot of government administration too. There's a saying in law that environmental law is administrative law and administrative law is environmental law. We created a lot of the government with the environmental movement, and we need to figure out a way to fund it to make it work as well as possible.
I've heard one political thinker saying that it's almost a time for people who are, I guess, what would you say broadly on the more left end of the political spectrum, for them to take a more conservative approach and maybe set aside some of the progressivism now and just try and like shore up, gains that might have been made in the past. Obviously, that's what we've been talking about, right? Attacks on things that were thought to be settled law a couple of years ago, or at least maybe not settled. I'm getting far afield here, but how do you think about that, right? Conserving what you've done versus trying to advance new ideas.
Yeah, well, and I was just talking a little about that today. Like I said, I am not going to compromise my values, but I'm going to work to elect people from either party that wants to move towards our values. Because our values of environmentalism, I said they're American, they are They are universally supported. There's poll tested. People support all of the things that I want to move forward. And so how we work to educate, to bring folks over to those values, I feel like there's a little bit of, branding right now and all of those things with either party. And that's the work we're going to do, and we're going to have to keep having conversations. I work actively in an actively bipartisan way, even with this state legislature, which in Illinois is a super majority of Democrats. We still talk to folks on both sides of the aisle, or sometimes even people on both sides of the Democratic Party. And so, continuing those conversations, because those kitchen table conversations are about how we share values. And I find that we share values and beliefs more often than the media might portray.
I will take that note. Jennifer Walling is the Executive Director of the Illinois Environmental Council. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
That's all the time we have for today. Coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, our reporter roundtable will talk about stories this week making headlines in Bloomington Normal, including how Illinois State University is planning to directly pay its athletes and a major settlement involving the McLean County Jail. Plus, in politics, we'll talk about Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza's decision to not run again, at least for that office, and the crowded field of Democratic candidates seeking open U.S. House and Senate seats, all a cascade from Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin's decision not to seek re-election next year. Plus, the outcome of Trump's request to cut public media and foreign aid funding is told by our own Washington correspondent, Linda Kenya. That's all coming up tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Leila Nazarova is an associate producer, and our digital producer is Coulson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. You can find all of our past programs and links to our podcast on our website, which is 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.